If you enjoy rabbits, you'll love our other podcast, Tanis. Tanis is a docudrama about an ancient and mysterious myth, perhaps the last genuine mystery of the information age. Download the podcast The Guardian calls compelling and wildly addictive at itunes.com/Tanis or tanispodcast.com. Tanis. It's television for your ears.
Ready when you are.
You believe your friend who was playing rabbits?
She started seeing mysterious men in gray.
What did she ask you?
She asked me how many steps to the lighthouse.
What do you know about chaos theory?
The streets were red, then black with blood.
That sounds poetic. Where are you now?
The bottom line isn't money or purpose. It's inspiration.
Are we still going to have sex?
I'm afraid not.
She believed Hazel killed Emily Masters.
Maybe later.
For sure, later. I first heard about the game shortly after my best friend, Yumiko Takada, disappeared. I started this podcast because I want to find out what happened to my friend. From the Public Radio Alliance and Minnow Beats Whale, you're listening to Rabbits. I'm Carly Parker. Stay with us.
Marigold, you're on the air. Hello?
Hello, Marigold.
Persephone?
Yes.
I'm glad you called back.
I can't sleep.
Well, you're not alone out there. That's why I'm here.
You believe you know why you're here?
Well, sure, as much as any of us can really know anything.
You can't trust anything or anyone.
Well, that's not a great starting position for a conversation, Persephone.
I'm sorry. I'm having a hard time.
What's going on?
My brother wasn't in the picture.
I'm afraid that doesn't make much sense to me. Could you elaborate?
We took a photo at Sears as a family when we were kids. My brother and I and my parents. That picture sat next to our sofa for my entire life. This morning I visited my mother. She still lives in the house I grew up in.
That's nice.
Yeah, it's great.
Please, let's try and stay positive, Persephone. I'd really like to help.
If you really want to help, it would really help if you could explain why my brother is no longer in that picture.
What do you mean? Did somebody cut him out?
No, he's just not there. It's a picture of three people.
What are you saying?
I'm saying that they erased my brother.
Who erased your brother?
The people in gray.
Those are the people you said who follow you around?
Yes.
Persephone, you sound a little troubled. Is there somebody you can call?
I called you.
Is there anyone else? Maybe a friend or a family member?
They erased my brother. And they're coming for me next.
That doesn't make any sense.
That was a clip from the Marigold recordings. From tape number 23, time code 11 minutes, 9 seconds. For the past 3 days, I've been going through those recordings with Jones, trying to pick out anything that could be rabbits related. This clip stuck out, not only because it's the same person who called in about some kind of game earlier, but also because of the discrepancy with her family photo, or I suppose I should say alleged discrepancy. It reminded me of the version of Andrew Wyeth's Christina's World Nick uncovered hidden in that JPEG, and the apparent discrepancy in my parents' death certificates. These things that seem to be just slightly off appear to be multiplying. Jones was interested, but he didn't appear convinced, or even all that concerned.
It's easy to lose focus following things like this.
Well, forgive me, but before I met you, things like this didn't happen.
I believe they did. You just weren't looking for them.
That's not helping.
Okay. All I'm saying is that alongside the genuine clues or events tied to the game are a lot of blind alleys, and 999 out of 1,000 of those things are either fake or unimportant.
That's very specific.
It's easy to become... You can become obsessed with this stuff, with certain discrepancies, and lose sight of what you're really trying to do.
I don't know what I'm trying to do.
You're trying to find out what happened to your friend, Yumiko.
Yes, I am, but if you don't mind, I have a couple more questions about my family. Jones.
Go ahead.
I need the name of the reporter who jumped in front of that train in Prague.
That didn't sound like a question.
The name?
Did you not hear anything I just said? What was that?
I don't know. A cat?
Do you hear a lot of cats around here?
No.
It sounded like a gate opening. Do you have a gate in the backyard?
Yeah.
It was a cat. A cute one. Black and white. Mostly white with a little black patch over her eye. She's taken to spending most of her time in my backyard, and some of her time in my condo. I'm calling her Scout. Jones was gone. He was relieved to see a cat, rather than a group of imposing gray figures. He said he'd be in touch, but that, for the time being, the further he was away from me physically, the safer I would be. I told him I wasn't worried. He told me that I should be. Before he left, he also told me the name of the reporter who'd thrown herself in front of that train in Prague. Her name was Monica Morelli. Outside of a brief note on a Czech website, I was unable to find much of anything about Monica Morelli, or her death. Not surprising, I suppose, given the nature of everything surrounding rabbits so far. But still, I was convinced that there had to be something, somewhere. I wasn't going to the Czech Republic anytime soon, but I did have a friend from Slovakia who'd been living in Prague. In the interest of full disclosure, he's kind of more of an ex-boyfriend friend. Hello, Andre?
Carly, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. You got my emails?
Yeah, I did some digging. I even went to the library this morning.
Good for you. Any luck?
You owe me dinner.
Of course.
With wine.
Yes.
Lots of wine. Good French wine.
Okay, what did you find?
Monica Morelli was a freelancer who wrote under the name Thomas Miller. Apparently, she was strikingly beautiful and had been having a hard time getting editors to take her seriously. She stopped interviewing in person and began booking assignments immediately. She was a great writer, actually.
What did she write about?
investigative stuff, social injustice, politics, more recently cults and medical experiments gone wrong. But she wrote in a very balanced way, never on a soapbox. She warned against the very real possibility of losing net neutrality before most of us had even heard the term. She was smart.
What about the game?
Well, I wasn't able to find much that might be related to a game, but I sent you everything I could find.
Thanks so much for doing this.
Dinner and wine, Carly Parker.
Of course.
I'll be in Seattle in a few months.
I'm looking forward to it.
Okay. Good luck with everything.
Thanks.
Goodbye.
Bye. Andre sent me everything he was able to dig up on Monica Morelli. It amounted to 5 documents. The first 3 appeared to be unrelated. There was an article on political unrest in Turkey, a travel piece about her time spent in India as a teenager, and a first-person account of a trip she made to the Indianapolis 500 Speedway with her father. If those articles were related to rabbits somehow, I was unable to find the connection. The final 2 documents were more interesting. The first was a photograph of a large brick building with 1 word followed by a question mark scrawled beneath it in thick black felt pen. Gatewick. The other document was a 4-page printout from an online gaming forum discussion of a game called Might and Magic 7 for Blood and Honor. It was a Windows-based game that had been released in January of 1999. Monica Morelli had joined the gaming forum using her regular email address. I wasn't able to find anything on the Gatewick building, but the online gaming forum printout was very interesting. It looks like Morelli had become obsessed with the game. Her description of that obsession on the forum sounded eerily similar to what had happened to Yumiko while watching that creepy video. Monica didn't move from her computer for 2 days. She said in her forum post that her boyfriend broke down her door because he thought something terrible had happened. But she was just sitting there, playing the game. Later, she wrote that she was pregnant and was no longer willing to risk the game, so she was asking other players on the forum to try and track something she'd discovered. She wanted them to win the game in her honor. But it looks like she wasn't honest about quitting. At least, not then. She kept playing for a little while longer. In the game, she'd equipped her character with a longsword called Mournblade, and with this sword, she had become invincible. She powered her way through the rest of the game, and after she'd finished, she was shown a graphic. 2 doors. The doors were imposed atop a dark image. The dark image was a computer-generated graphic of a painting. That painting was Dog Lover in Hell. The message was simple. Make your choice. She chose the door on the right. Just as she clicked her mouse on the image of the door on her monitor, her boyfriend entered and, once again, caught her playing the game. She had once again lost time, almost 24 hours. She was pregnant and almost lost the baby. From that point, she really did stop playing. She told the people in the forum that she believed she should have chosen the door on the left. She wrote that had she chosen the door on the left, she would have entered the gauntlet, the final stage of the game. She asked the others in the forum to find the sword she'd used and get to that door, but try as they might, nobody could find any mention of a sword called Mournblade in the game. The game's designers confirmed this. That sword didn't exist. That's where the printout Andre sent me of the forum discussion ends. But that's not the end of the Monica Morelli story.
By the time she'd started playing that game, I barely recognized her anymore.
That's Professor Harlan Harrison, chair of the English department at the University of British Columbia. I Skyped with him while he was on a break between classes. He's exactly what you'd expect in a professor of English Lit. Full beard, tan corduroy suit jacket with leather elbow pads. He was the real thing. Could you describe how her behavior had changed?
Well, she'd become obsessed with alternate histories. She thought that the world might be ending, that something was happening, a conspiracy. I mean, she went to Prague because she believed there was a discrepancy in an image in one section of stained glass in St. Vitus Cathedral.
What kind of discrepancy?
She'd uncovered three separate descriptions of a certain section of that glass that suggested a different layout from what she could see in the historical photographs. The abundant photographic evidence that she was on a fool's errand didn't seem to dissuade her at all.
So she wanted to see it for herself.
She was deeply disturbed at that point. I thought she might end up standing on a street corner yelling about how the Apollo moon landing never actually happened.
Right.
She started seeing mysterious men in gray following her around. I called her family and suggested they get her help, but I was too late. She was already on a plane.
Thanks so much for your help, for taking the time.
You're welcome, but please stay away from that game.
What game?
You know what game.
Whether you're running through the city from mysterious people in gray, or jogging along the pier to get in shape for summer, you need socks. You need Bombas socks. Bombas socks are highly functional, fashionable, and philanthropic athletic leisure socks. We love our Bombas, and you're going to love yours. For every pair of socks sold, Bombas donates a pair to those in need. One pair purchased equals one pair donated, and so far, they've donated more than 2 million pairs. So let's help them get to 3 million. Along with Bombas' already classic lineup of amazing socks, they now have dress socks and invisible, no-show socks for spring. Bombas are like nothing else on the market, built for both athletic performance and extreme leisure. These are advanced socks that look and feel amazing. Visit bombas.com/rabbits to get 20% off your first order. Bombas socks are incredibly comfortable, strong around the toes. They breathe, they fit. You can really feel the quality. These are exceptionally well-made socks. I just received my first order, and my feet don't want me to wear anything else. That's bombas.com/rabbits to get 20% off your first order of Bombas socks. Here at the Public Radio Alliance, we make a lot of websites, because we need a lot of websites. Well, let's be honest. You already know that Nick and Terry make all the websites, and that they use Squarespace for all of them. It's so easy, and everything is so clean, elegant, and it just works. Because we use Squarespace, our sites look good wherever you happen to be looking at them. Laptops, desktops, or mobile devices. Squarespace is the best. Their incredible award-winning designer templates are the most beautiful way to present your ideas online. Create a beautiful website with Squarespace's all-in-one platform. There's nothing to install, patch, or upgrade. Ever. If you have a passion that you obsess over, like scrolling through pages of microfiche looking for clues to a strange underground game, or selling your self-curated collection of mystery boxes on eBay, whatever it is that keeps you up at night, that drives you creatively, you need to get it out there. If you need a domain as well, Squarespace offers a unique domain experience that's fully transparent and simple to set up. With Squarespace, you can lock down your next move idea with a unique domain and create a website to launch your idea, a portfolio to get your project out there, an online store to officially open for business, and so much more. So, share your ideas with the world. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code RABBITS to get 10% off your first purchase. That's squarespace.com and use the offer code RABBITS. Squarespace. Make your next move. So, Monica Morelli had been playing rabbits, and believed that she was being followed by mysterious men in gray. She had conflicting copies of my parents' death certificates in her purse, a photo with the word Gatewick written beneath it, and she was investigating a discrepancy in the stained glass of a famous church. What was she looking for? What was the connection with my parents? I'm going to continue to try and dig up more on Monica Morelli, but in the meantime, there were two new developments. First, I did manage to find some information on the Gatewick Institute via that photograph. And second, another mystery application made an appearance. Unlike Cat Chat, which suddenly appeared out of nowhere on my laptop, this one popped up on my phone. It was called Breadcrumbs. First, the photograph. I found the building in that photo by scrolling through endless pages of research facilities and eventually landing on a match. It took hours. The structure in the photograph was called the Carlsbury Building. I wasn't able to track down the name of any company that might be leasing the space or information on the current owner, but it was definitely the building in that picture. The Carlsbury Building was located in the Bay Area, just outside of San Francisco. There was mention of Gatewick on another page, but it was a dead end. Nothing but a passing reference from 1986. Another few hours of research resulted in some additional information. The Gatewick Institute appeared to be located in a few buildings over the years, all of them based in or around San Francisco. It looks like they were active in the 70s and 80s, but I couldn't find any evidence of the Gatewick Institute operating outside of that time period. It appeared to be some kind of medical research facility, / self-help spa retreat, promising peace of mind and body. I managed to dig up a few ads looking for research subjects, but other than those ads and a seemingly defunct website at gatewickinstitute.com, I haven't been able to uncover much at all. But I'm going to keep looking. I've had even less luck researching the strange application that had appeared on my phone. The icon was an old house in the woods, Hansel and Gretel style. I did a reverse image search, but nothing came up. I searched the term breadcrumbs app as well. Nothing related there. So I went on the App Store to get the designer's contact info. Nothing. Google Play? Nothing. In fact, there was nothing anywhere. There was an app on my phone that didn't exist. So, of course, I opened it. It was a fairly simple interface. It looked like Tumblr, actually. Text, pictures, video, 3 tabs. There was nothing in the text or video sections, but when I tapped on the picture icon, an image came up. It was a graphic, a circle above a pyramid. It had a kind of Illuminati vibe, but that wasn't what I first thought when I saw it. The first thing that popped into my mind was Berserk. To be more specific, the Atari 2600 home version of the popular video game Berserk by Stern Electronics of Chicago. My brother had become interested in Easter eggs in video games. Obsessed with Easter eggs in video games would actually be more accurate. The first place he found this symbol, the circle floating above the pyramid, was in Berserk. He subsequently discovered that symbol in at least 5 other games. The arcade console versions of Zaxxon, Wonder Boy, and Ms. Pac-Man, and the home versions of Myst, The Legend of Zelda, and Microsoft Flight Simulator 4.0. He had a theory that the symbol was related to something like The Secret by Byron Price, the puzzle book Treasure Hunt from 1982 that I mentioned in our first episode. My brother thought that maybe the appearance of the symbols was related to a real-world treasure hunt, and that the context of each symbol may have been significant. So he collected all of the information he could about what else was on the screen along with the pyramid and sphere. To my knowledge, he was unable to figure out what the appearance of that symbol meant. The appearance of that symbol on my phone brought me right back into my brother's bedroom, staring at his cork bulletin board filled with clues and possible connections between those games. I didn't feel like there was any possible way I was going to solve a mystery my brother spent years trying to figure out. But then I remembered that I had access to something my brother didn't. I had access to the magician.
Of course I've seen it before. It's the moonrise.
What's that?
It's what those participating in the game refer to as a marker.
Okay, so what does it mark?
Well, I like to think of them as signposts, letting you know you're on the right path, that you should be vigilant for the next clue or gateway.
Okay, so you like to think of them as signposts.
That's right.
Is there maybe another interpretation?
Yes.
What is it?
Some players believe these symbols are warnings.
Warnings?
Yeah, indicators that you might be close to stepping off the playing field.
What playing field?
The world. The moonrise was specific to 6 and 7. There was no mentions of any appearance in 8. You say you didn't install this application yourself?
No.
It's very interesting.
What do you think it means?
I'm not sure. Do you mind if I dig around in your phone a bit?
Dig around?
Jailbreak it.
Will I still be able to use my phone?
Of course.
So, I let the magician jailbreak my new phone. He told me that he couldn't find anything directly related to that application or the symbol. He offered to remove or block the application, but I told him, no way. Whoever put it there was probably going to send something else. I told him to leave it as it was. He smiled. I could tell that he was hoping I would say that. Just as I was about to leave, he asked me a question.
Did you follow the link to the website I gave you last time you were here?
I did.
And what did you think?
About what?
About Hazel.
Well, it looks like he or she was about to win 8, and then mysteriously dropped out and forfeited the game.
And?
And Hazel was apparently some kind of armchair revolutionary, responsible for a few cliches like, where's our future? Nothing but a bunch of philosophical blue sky platitudes.
You're a bit too cynical for someone so young.
Just a bit?
Rumor has it that the love of Hazel's life was helping him or her play the game. They were a perfect team, allegedly. They were apparently right near the end of the game, approaching the convergence when...
What?
She was killed.
Playing the game?
Yes.
How did she die?
A freak accident.
Tell me.
The emergency brake and transmission failed in a car. It skidded on some ice and ran into her while she and Hazel were out walking. She was pinned against a stone wall, and she bled out in Hazel's arms.
That's terrible.
That's when Hazel quit playing.
I found a broken link to a picture. I think it might have been a photograph of Hazel.
There have been a few alleged photos of Hazel over the years, all of them fake. There was a woman in Stoke-on-Trent who was very close to the girl who died. We all believed she was Hazel for a few years. And then a young man in Boston.
What can you tell me about her, the girl who died?
Quite a bit, although none of it will be of any use.
He was right. There was a lot of information on the girl who died, and none of it shed any light on Hazel. Her name was Emily Masterson. She was an American living in England at the time of her death. She had a girlfriend in college, the woman the magician referenced earlier. She had a couple of live-in boyfriends after that, a stockbroker, a drummer. Then she dropped off the map, completely disappeared from public life for a few years before she died. It was during this time that she'd, allegedly, been playing rabbits, with Hazel. While I was in the Magician's Arcade, Jones sent me a message. He said that he'd found something else in those old Marigold radio recordings. Are you hiring? Do you know where you should post to find the best candidates for the position? Posting your job in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites. And now you can, with ZipRecruiter. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use website helps you find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. And ZipRecruiter already has 9 million resumes you can search through in their database. How does this sound? Looking for help uncovering potentially deadly and mysterious cult in the woods in the Pacific Northwest. Must love drinking tea and running from terrifying shadow beasts. Contact Nick Silver at the Public Radio Alliance. Avoid juggling emails and calls to your office. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. If you run into any issues, don't worry. ZipRecruiter's friendly and human support staff is standing by ready to help. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been featured on Forbes, Wall Street Journal, Time Magazine, The New York Times, TechCrunch, and CBS, and why it's been used by over 1 million businesses. Right now, Rabbits listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/rabbits. That's ZipRecruiter.com/rabbits. One more time. To try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/rabbits. Here at the Public Radio Alliance, we send a lot of correspondence. And we signed up for Stamps.com because we wanted to save money, of course. But more importantly, we wanted to save time. Stamps.com is convenient, easy, reliable, and flexible. Stamps.com brings all the services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your fingertips. With Stamps.com, buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package using your own computer and printer. Stamps.com is more powerful than a postage meter at just a fraction of the cost. Unlike the post office, Stamps.com never closes. Print postage for letters or packages at your convenience, 24/7. So, whether you're sending out requests for help solving the mysteries of the universe by deciphering a mysterious bit of computer code, or you're sending fan mail to your favorite podcast, you know, the podcast about that strange and potentially deadly game, you need to save time and money. You need Stamps.com. Right now, sign up for Stamps.com and use the promo code RABBITS for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus postage, and a digital scale without long-term commitments. Get started with Stamps.com today, and within minutes, you'll be printing postage right from your desk. Go to Stamps.com, and before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in RABBITS. That's Stamps.com, enter RABBITS. With Stamps.com, you'll never have to go to the post office again. What is it?
I think you should just listen.
Okay.
Call me back after you heard it.
The Keeper by an unknown author for Doc Hornet. The garden world of Arcadia exploded in blood and pain every 89 days. Aside from that one day, the day of the sacrifice, Arcadia was a paradise, a community of joyful beauty, friends helping friends. Family was an unknown and unnecessary term in Arcadia. Everyone was family. Ivan the Ninth had been working to stop the 89-day cycle, the temporary madness. It came over the garden sometime between sunrise and noon, and always ended after the first person was killed. At various times over the years, Ivan felt he had the answer, locking people up, drugging them, preaching the word of the holy kings, but nothing worked. Ivan was growing old, and he knew that it was only a matter of time before he was unable to protect himself or call upon some of the younger ones for help during the temporary madness. It was Ivan, the keeper, who had been charged with looking into what the people of Arcadia referred to as that which must always be served. And it was Ivan who had failed them, like the keeper before him, and the one before that. It was on the evening before the 89th day that Ivan made up his mind. He was going to sacrifice himself for the good of the garden. He was going to make certain that he would be the first to die during the temporary madness, that his death would give his beautiful Arcadia 88 new days of peace, and another chance to find out how to end the temporary madness without losing one of the younger ones. The young man called the third Paul would be the new keeper. He was smart and kind, and Ivan knew the garden would be in good hands. In all the years of Ivan's lifetime, nobody had ever sacrificed their own life. It was forbidden. This was another reason Ivan was dedicated to taking this path. You see, it wasn't only because he was old and weak and not long for this world. It was also because he felt like his sacrifice might make a difference. Perhaps Ivan's unselfish act might finally break the 89-day cycle and bring peace to his beloved Arcadia. So, just before the sun rose on the morning of the sacrifice, Ivan got up, dressed in his finest wool suit, and made his way to the center of the town square. He stood there, holding a knife, waiting for the madness to take him. Waiting to make his personal sacrifice. And he did it. As the first ray of the morning sun hit his face, he slit his own wrists. His fellow denizens of the garden ran out of their homes to witness, in horror, what Ivan had done. And, as he lay dying, he saw that none of them had gone mad. He was happy. His sacrifice had worked. He could die in peace, knowing that there was a chance for them to live without fear for a while. But, no. The world had other plans. Terrible plans. This time, the madness was different. This time, it didn't end with the first death. This time, the madness was everything. Endless. The streets were red and then black with blood. By the time the last members of the Garden of Arcadia had been torn apart, the sun had still only barely risen above the horizon. Ivan was alive long enough to see every single person in Arcadia, old and young, ripped to ribbons of blood, flesh and bone, in a whirl of rage and madness, the likes of which the world had never seen. As the light within him died, Ivan knew that it was him. He did this. And with that understanding, the final keeper died. And Arcadia, right along with him.
It was a crazy story, but I had no idea what it had to do with rabbits. Jones had his theories.
Doc Hornet.
Okay, I'll bite. What about Doc Hornet?
It's an anagram.
For what?
For the condor.
The condor.
You don't recognize the name?
From the circle. The condor won the second iteration of rabbits, the game known as Two.
Very good. You're a quick study.
Am I? I gotta say, it doesn't feel like things are happening all that quickly.
There's a lot of information to parse and wade through. You're doing very well. Honestly.
Thanks. Okay, why did I have to read that story if the writer's name is the big clue?
I needed to see if something in the text elicited a response.
It did. I was grossed out and scared. Was that the response you were looking for?
I'm not sure.
Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Back to Doc Hornet, the Condor.
What about him?
This story is more than just background on rabbits. It's a clue to a station.
A station?
A kind of repository or storehouse for clues.
How do you figure?
There's a station known as Arcadia. It's located deep in the forest, someplace in Alaska.
That sounds far.
It's pretty far.
Are you suggesting I should fly to Alaska?
I'm definitely not suggesting anything of the kind.
What would you do?
I'll send you what I have in Arcadia, as it relates to rabbits.
Jones?
Yes?
Are you playing the game?
Check your email.
Joan sent me some information about Arcadia. It was a whole lot of nothing, as far as I could tell. Just some speculation about where the place was located. Most believed it was in Alaska. But there was disagreement on whether it was situated on an ancient native burial site or a UFO landing area. I was seriously considering flying up north. But I needed to get a better sense of where exactly this Garden of Arcadia was located. It didn't matter if it was an ancient native burial site or a UFO landing area. I needed something a bit more specific, like map coordinates. I was just about to dive into some deep web research on Arcadia when Jones called again.
Priesthood 1.
Wow. Where'd you hear that name?
Is it yours?
Yes. Where did you find it?
I searched your name.
That's it?
That's it.
Just now?
A while ago. I just received some advanced results.
I didn't write it under my name. I called myself Parker Carlson.
Sorry. I searched all your names.
Of course.
You're a comic artist?
I used to draw, a little.
This is pretty advanced stuff.
If by advanced you mean infantile punk rock teenage angst, V for Vendetta, Watchmen rip-off bullshit?
That's not what I meant.
No?
No. The artwork is fantastic.
Isn't that what people normally say about a shitty movie? The cinematography was fantastic.
You're incredibly talented, with both words and pictures.
Thanks, Jones. You're making me blush.
It kind of reminds me of Rush's 2112. You know, with the beauty of art versus the high-tech church, although I don't remember Rush having evil sentient AI at the center of things.
No, I don't suppose they did.
It's really good. I was only able to track down 29 pages. Is there more?
That's pretty much it. I have a couple of roughly sketched out panels, but I stopped working on it when I started college.
That's too bad. I'd love to see how it ends. The imagery, it really is great. I'm impressed.
Thanks. Again.
Of course.
Did you find anything else?
I'm sorry, was I intrusive? I was intrusive.
It's okay. So, Jones found a comic I'd created during my senior year of high school. I was obsessed with comics. Still am, actually. Priesthood One was a story about a rebellion against a technocracy, an evil empire. Our hero, an intrepid young woman named Geo, discovered the power of art and used it to overthrow the bad guys. Come to think of it, it did sound a lot like that Rush album. Rush was my brother's favorite band. I can't imagine where Jones managed to find Priesthood One. I took a few copies to my local comic store in the summer between high school and college, and I did scan it at some point for inclusion in an anthology in Germany. There was a MySpace page somewhere, I think, featuring a few local comic artists. I looked for that page a few years ago, but I couldn't find it. Talking about Priesthood One reminded me just how important comics had been in my life. The worlds of Alan Moore, Warren Ellis, and Neil Gaiman pulled me through some really rough times. I was halfway through rereading a Swamp Thing collection, trying to get my mind off things, when I got a call from Yumiko's brother, Adam. He was in Japan, trying to convince his mother to come home, and asked if I could go to Yumiko's gym and pick something up. Apparently, the gym had been sold. It was too bad. It was a really cool old boxing gym. I'd been there once before. Yumiko had a trainer named Mori Albert, who was merciless. I was sore for a week. Once was enough for me. Miko went every second day. Hi, are you Mori?
That's right.
I'm Carly. I'm here to pick up Yumiko's things.
And pay the balance?
I'm sorry?
The balance owing, $31 for the locker.
Oh, okay.
I don't have any change.
That's fine.
This is it.
Thanks.
Any word from Yumiko?
No, she's still missing.
Do they know what happened?
As far as we know, she just disappeared.
The police?
Nothing yet.
That's too bad. She was a great kid.
You mean she is a great kid?
Right. Yes. Yeah, she is.
Right. Okay. Well, thanks for this.
Sure, no problem.
I opened the box of Yumiko's stuff as soon as I got back into my car. There was a skipping rope, some gloves, tape, and a pair of some kind of soft shoes. There was also a shower kit with shampoo, deodorant, razors, and a worn-out brown accordion file that contained an old logic board. Yeah, one of these things was not like the others. It was a logic board from a video game. It was labeled Stargate by Williams. Stargate was a sequel to their wildly popular game called Defender. In fact, Stargate's full title is Defender Stargate. We always just called it Stargate. It was one of my brother's favorite games. What was Yumiko doing with a logic board from an old arcade game in her locker? Well, it turns out she never actually received it. The logic board had been delivered to Yumiko, care of the gym, after she disappeared. I took the logic board to somebody I knew would be able to help me look into it. The magician popped the logic board into his Defender game cabinet and hooked it up. The first thing I noticed was that this version was actually titled Defender 2, and not Stargate. The second thing I noticed were the high scores. It was the circle, here called Immortals, which is the way Stargate refers to the holders of the high scores. Actually, Stargate refers to the all-time leading high scores as Immortals, and the daily high scores as Mortals. Here, the Immortals section was the circle, and the Mortals section was just a list of what appeared to be random scores and names. The magician thought this was very interesting. He pointed out that this version of the circle only included the names from 1 through 6. 7, which reportedly began around 1989, wasn't included. The last name on the list was Californiac, the reputed winner of six. The first thing I did when the magician booted up the game was perform the Easter egg trick my brother taught me. You start the game, move the joystick down, and press the one player start, reverse, and thrust. Then, press reverse, two player start, and fire. Then move the joystick down and press one player start, thrust, and fire. This coded sequence normally unlocks the game's secret credit screen. But in this case, it unlocked something else. Next time, we'll look into what I found when I performed my brother's Easter egg trick on that Defender 2 machine. Plus, we'll dig into what Jones sent me on Arcadia. But before I sign off, Jones was calling. He had a question about something we'd discussed earlier. What is it?
Priesthood 1.
What about it?
When did you create it?
Right around the end of my senior year of high school. Why?
Are you sitting down?
What does that have to do with anything?
It's an expression.
Like, your news is going to be so shocking that I'll have to... Jones, it's not you, Miko. They didn't...
No, they didn't find it. No, it isn't anything like that.
Okay. Then what is it?
Priesthood 1.
You already said that.
It's an anagram.
An anagram? For what?
For the door is open.
It's Rabbits. I'm Carly Parker. We'll be back again in 2 weeks. Until then, stay safe. If you enjoy Rabbits, you'll love our other podcast, Tanis. Tanis is a docudrama about an ancient and mysterious myth, perhaps the last genuine mystery of the information age. Download the podcast The Guardian calls compelling and wildly addictive at itunes.com/Tanis or tanispodcast.com. Tanis, it's television for your ears.
The Black Tapes is a serialized docudrama about one journalist's search for the truth, her enigmatic subject's mysterious past, and the literal and figurative ghosts that haunt them both. Subscribe to The Black Tapes by visiting theblacktapes.com or itunes.com/theblacktapes.
Rabbits is a Public Radio Alliance and Minnow Beats Whale production. Produced by Hollis Adams Lane. Produced, mixed, and edited by Terry Miles and Carly Parker. Additional editorial and production assistance by Morgan Stevens. Associate producers Tara Pratt and Bailey Everett. Producer Emeritus Mackenzie Howard. Executive producers Terry Miles and Hollis Adams Lane. You can support Rabbits by visiting our website at rabbitspodcast.com and clicking on support in the top right corner. If you enjoy Rabbits, please rate and especially review on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you found us. Reviews are key to keeping Rabbits on the charts where people can find our show. Thank you so much for listening to Rabbits. For legal and safety reasons, we've elected to change some names and leave others out entirely. We don't do this very often, but we're not willing to compromise people's safety for any reason. Thanks again for listening to Rabbits.